Welcome to the Point Forward Podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward Podcast, free agency edition. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show. It's Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And on the other line is Jim Ozarski, Bucks reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was there for the 25-minute window where everything comes at you like a, you know, like a fire hose in free agency on June 30th. The Milwaukee Bucks made some moves, none of which I think were massive or necessarily huge surprises. Bobby Portis is back. Wesley Matthews is back. Javon Carter is back. Joe Inglis is in the fold, a new addition, but with some caveats. So we're going to talk about all of this stuff today. Jim, welcome back. I know you were you jump out of a vacation right into the frying pan as free agency gets going, and so I knew that it was going to be a trial by fire. But for the most part, this feels like it was pretty run of the mill, you know, both for the Bucks and for the NBA at large, non Kevin Durant category, which we can talk about in a second. Was there anything about this period of time that surprised you for the Milwaukee Bucks?
Yeah, non-Kevin Durant time. That's a whole thing. Yeah, free agency. No, I think, look, there weren't a lot of teams with massive cap room this offseason, JR. I mean, that's obviously usually how or when craziness happens, if you will. So that was part of it. You know, in the Bucks specifically, you know, no, there were no shocks or surprises. I mean, you mentioned Joe Inglis. Look, they had a taxpayer exception.
Yep.
That proved to be about $6.5 million. And that's what happens when you have a winning team. You know, you're a taxpaying team. You're only allowed a certain amount of dollars. That was it. The only real question, JR, was would they have a player that they felt deserved the entire exception? Or were they going to approach it like they did last year where, you know, George Hill got part of it, Yorgos Kalatsaikas got part of it, Rajon Tucker, believe it or not, got part of it. That was really the question. It wasn't, and in that moment, it's who is that player? Who knows? I mean, Joe Ingles, in hindsight, sure, it's a good fit. We can get into that if he's healthy, but that could have been any number of players depending on the direction John Horst had wanted to go. So no, I wouldn't say there's a shock. I would say if you're a Bucks fan, you know, John Horst probably checked some boxes and retained some players you'd hope he retain. And, you know, they are who they are if the big three is healthy.
Okay. So I was going to talk about Portis first, but let's actually talk about Ingles, because he is the one thing that I don't think anybody necessarily saw coming. Whether or not you could classify it as a surprise is kind of up to your own interpretation. This is the type of player that the Bucks would have probably been pursuing if you knew that they were going to give their entire taxpayer mid-level exception to. And I guess you could argue that maybe that was a lot to give up for a guy who is not going to be playing to start the season. Joe Ingles, who's 35 years old, he is a sharp shooter. He's not an athletic freak. He's not a guy that's going to wow you in any sense of the word on tape, but he is a guy who can shoot the rock and is seemingly the type of guy that would work well in the Bucks system. He also tore his ACL in late January last year, and thus probably won't be available until, you know, probably at least a couple months into the season. Usually those injuries, you think of them as kind of a full year. Well, now that's, you know, that's probably the middle of the season that he would be available. So the Bucks are giving up a lot. I don't know if that's just the type of player that they were attracting, because, you know, their top spots are essentially spoken for. It isn't a ton of money, so you're not going to be getting like a frontline free agent or anything. There were other guys out there that could sort of fit the bill, but you're kind of treating him now as sort of a mid-season acquisition, basically. You know, like he's a guy that's just going to be available all of a sudden health-wise, you know, if health is where you want it to be. He's going to be a guy who kind of shows up mid-season as kind of like a boost to what they have going on. It obviously doesn't matter. The regular season doesn't matter for the Bucks and hasn't for the last several years. It's all about what happens in the postseason. So this is obviously an investment looking with one eye toward what's going to happen in the postseason. But I guess I'd be curious if you think that amount of money seems like a little bit of a stretch, or if this is just kind of the situation the Bucks were in. This is just the move they had to make.
Yeah, I think this was, you know, the move they had to make. And you're right. It's it is essentially going to be a later season acquisition. Yeah, Joe Ingles, that is the correct pronunciation. I think I flipped that at the very beginning there. But yeah, it's interesting, JR, because for a guy like him, it clearly was a player the Bucks targeted and went after hard. So, and what I mean by that is if you kind of zoom out and look at all the deals, I mean, you're talking about your from the max contracts, like John Morant's, like own team maxes, who you know, their versions of Giannis, right? Devin Booker, John Morant, etc. And then trickle it down to Jalen Brunson at $100 million. You know, there weren't a ton of these smaller deals. I mean, Lonnie Walker IV suddenly was a rescinded qualified offer, goes to the Lakers for about the same amount of money. Patty Mills in Brooklyn opted out 2 years, $14.5 million. I mean, the Bucks were pretty aggressive. I mean, you're looking at guys like Kevin Knox and Daniel House, Dwayne Dedman. I mean, I guess what I'm saying here is, JR, it's I don't know if the Bucks. I mean, maybe the Bucks could have waited to see if they could have spread the exception, see if there were other two players they could get for $6.5 million. Maybe Joe Ingles would have taken $1.5 million if no $1.4 million if no one else was going to knock on his door. What does $2.5 million get you? I don't know. The Bucks didn't have two picks to bring in like last year, you know, with Mamu and Kautsaga. So I don't know. But you're right. He was the guy. They clearly feel that at 6'8", 40% career three-point shooter, his pick and roll ball handling has improved every year of his 8 seasons in Utah, up to the point last year, JR, where according to the NBA's advanced stats, his pick and roll ball handling was, you know, his percentile, his efficiency, I guess, however you want to view that, was better than Chris Middleton's a year ago. Now, that's just a year ago. You know, he has gotten better at it. But if you look at the way they lost in Boston, JR, without Middleton, they didn't have a, you know, their two-man game went away. You know, they didn't have anyone who could score. And it's not that Joe Ingles is going to go to the rack, but he's a guy who, at least if he's going to run pick and roll, the team has to respect the fact that he can make the three, that he can make the 18-foot Chris Middleton jumper. So, you know, he looks to be that guy, and clearly the Bucks feel the ACL will be recovered enough. And at 36 years old, him shooting 34% from three last year before he got hurt was more of an anomaly, or maybe a trend, you know, and that would have gone back to his career average had he played a whole season.
Yeah, Utah for me is kind of like a cautionary tale of maybe not cautionary, but you know, that's an example of a team that is not a traditional power like the Bucks, who had the pieces in place to make a championship run. It didn't happen, and they kind of fell pretty swiftly. So it's interesting. The Bucks, of course, were able to cash in last year, and still are at this championship level. So it's just an interesting comparison in my head. Okay, going back to the other moves that the Bucks made, basically we're just talking about bringing the band back together, running it back. Bobby Portis is here for another 4 years, four more years of Bobby POTUS. He is the fan favorite, much beloved in this town. It seems like the love affair is mutual. People are going to love this. They're going to build a statue, Jim, somewhere. I don't know where. We'll scout locations. 4 years, $49 million. That is a lot of money to commit to a guy like Bobby Portis. But as I said previously, I mean, again, this guy is still pretty young. He's still probably going to get even better. And he certainly has a role for this Bucks team and has filled it very well. I think most people not surprised to see him back. That was certainly the prevailing sentiment. Was there ever a chance he wouldn't come back? Because quite honestly, middle of the season, you and I were talking like it was a sure thing he wasn't going to come back because there was just too much money to be made elsewhere. The Bucks wouldn't be able to afford him, but they are able to work it out. So do you think there are any alternate timelines here where he doesn't he does choose to get the bag elsewhere, or was this always meant to be?
Yeah, I think the alternate timeline, JR, was if more teams around the league had cap room. I mean, I you know, to me, a 6'10" big man shooting 40% from three with over 30 double doubles, who's 27, he's 2 months younger than Giannis, So if the Bucks believe Giannis is entering his prime and get better, you got to feel they feel the same way about Bobby Portis. To me, like, that combination of factors, plus a ring, plus I believe he's rehabbed his image, if you will, from the way things ended in Chicago. To me, Jared, doesn't that scream? You know, think about Bobby Portis in like the John Hammond years. Like, isn't Bobby Portis making like $15 million a year if he signs with the Bucks, you know, back in 2014? You know,
I was thinking about the John Salmon signing the other day, and it's like, that's kind of like Javon Carter now. Like, that's the level of player that they should have been paying. You know, that's the amount they should have been paying for a John Salmon. So, whatever. Sorry, that's neither here nor there.
So, you know, I think, yeah, in an alternate timeline, it's, you know, other teams have cap room, and instead, the teams that did have cap room either were not in a position to sign, you know, a veteran player where the deal would take him into his 30s, or they're going to kind of hold on to their cap room and, you know, like, for instance, San Antonio Spurs begin the tank for Wembanyama, you know, next year at the number one pick, right? So there just weren't going to be a lot of suitors. That's number one. Number two, you know, the Bucks, you know, by doing this sort of dance of the player option for 2 years, you know, it gave the Bucks early bird rights. And for what that means for listeners is, you know, the NBA created this exception or these exceptions in the name of Larry Bird, for teams to retain their own free agents. They're allowed to exceed the salary cap. So even though the Bucks are up against the cap, they had $49 million to spend on Bobby Portis. They did not have $49 million to spend on anyone else. That's the key factor here. You know, so even if you would have walked, that means the Bucks still only have $6.5 million. So no, you know, fans, hey, you know, they couldn't have spent $49 million on player ABC. No. It was Bobby Portis or nobody. And in that case, that's worth the tax bill because, as I just said, JR, I don't know if you're getting a player that you know fits so well with the coaching staff and your stars. You know what he's going to bring to the table in the locker room, the practice court, and in a championship run. So you add in all those factors. It made total sense for the Bucks to offer him the max, 4 for $49. Could 4 for $40 have worked? I don't know. But he'd also taken less money the last 2 years. Like, why do that? To me, that extra $9 million, JR, is sort of like the Bucks letting Jrue Holiday play those 8 seconds against Cleveland so he could make that bonus in the regular season finale. Like, they're kind of paying him. Like, I know you're supposed to pay a guy for what he's going to do. I think some of this was thank you for what you did. So, yeah, Portis was always going to opt out. And to me, JR, was the biggest free agent move the Bucks could make, should make, had to make. And yeah, they made it happen. And Bobby Portis is back for another 4 years, for another term, if you will.
Yes. Another term for the POTUS. Also the moves to resign Wesley Matthews and Javon Carter, two big pieces of the defense, backcourt depth right there. Defensive depth in particular, these guys both, I think probably exceeded their what you would have expected from them as midseason additions over the past year. Of course, Carter was waived by Brooklyn, added by the Bucks in February. Wes Matthews was signed off the street in December. Of course, recently a Buck just a couple years earlier, and both performed at a pretty high level. I don't know if there's a whole lot of analysis that goes into that other than they both deserved to come back. One thing we did see a lot last year is some frustration that Javon Carter actually wasn't given more run, given that he had shown some flashes and George Hill struggled a little bit toward the end of the season into the playoffs. But, you know, again, we've talked about that, how he and Mike Budenholzer have a longstanding relationship, he and George Hill. So there's a trust there. And George Hill has certainly done a lot over the course of his career, so he's going to get the benefit of the doubt, but maybe now not, because Javon Carter's here now on a 2-year deal. You know, it's modest money, but he's not just a midseason. He's not just a guy who got waived anymore and added to the roster. He's a central piece of what the Bucks are doing. Wesley Matthews is getting up there in years. You know, he's in his mid 30s as well. But can show that he could still defend at an elite level. Both of these guys, do you see their roles being essentially the same as what they were last year?
Well, Carter first, yes, 2-year deal, 7-year player option, slightly more than the league minimum. It does throw into question the George Hill scenario. We don't know. Look, we asked John Horse about George Hill and his back injury, the T6, T7 tear, or between it. And all John Horse said is it's been addressed. What does that mean? Sure, George Hill said it was going to have to be. Can he still play? Does he still want to play? Is he unavailable until, like Brook Lopez, is he unavailable until, we don't know. George Hill might get traded. I don't know. So but the Javon Carter deal does, you're right, Jared, does make me think they feel he will play for them. Now, a little more than the vet minimum, I don't know. I mean, to me, that it's more money than Jordan Wara. It's more money than Thanasis Adetokounmpo opting in. It's more money than Luka Vildoza if he's the 15th man. Like, I feel like it's that requires a little bit of playing time. I don't know if Javon Carter comes back if they say, all right, you're going to play 6 minutes. So he's interesting in that way, JR. Like, I think his re-signing throws George Hill's future into question a little bit. Matthews, look, he started the year like gangbusters, like 40 plus percent from three, playing great defense for 12 games. And then the last 30 games, he shot 27% from three. Like, still played good defense, but the offense totally went away. It improved as he started late in the season, JR, and I think that's the question. Do, like, the 36-year-old Wesley Matthews, is there 100 games in there? That's, to me, that's the question. Clearly, the Bucks feel there are. Does that mean he's back to running with Jrue Holiday as the starting two guard? Does it matter if he starts and it's Grayson Allen again, if Grayson Allen's still on the team? I think that's those are the questions with Carter and Matthews, JR. It's not so much what they're going to do, what their role, what they could give offensively, defensively. It's really more, what does Mike Budenholzer do with them? Is Wesley kind of your bench guy until late in the season because you want to keep his legs fresh, et cetera, et cetera? So, yes, good players to keep. Could the Bucks have waited, another week or two to make those deals? Sure. But clearly they targeted them. They wanted those guys. They didn't want to really change in terms of finding similar players in the market. There's no mysteries there. So it makes sense for all parties. Really, we'll just see once the season starts, JR, what their actual like roles and playing time may be.
Okay, so you rattled off a bunch of roster moves that we haven't really discussed, although I did mention some of them with Ben Steele last week. Pat Connaughton opting in, Thanasis, maybe Luka Vildoza's back. I mean, this is almost the exact same team, the exact same team as last year. So I guess my question is, will that work? The Bucks were not in a position to make many dramatic moves to their roster, dramatic changes, but, is this still a team operating under the glow of a championship banner where they feel like they don't want to make a lot of changes because they know they have a championship caliber roster? They just did it. Or, I mean, heck, that was less than a year ago that they won it. So I guess that makes some sense. But on the other hand, this is a team that's getting older. They're going to be an older-ish team relying on, stars like Brook Lopez, Chris Middleton, and Jrue Holiday. So I don't know if there's much else that the Bucks can really go to if those guys get hurt like we saw at times last year. Do you think this team is still a championship caliber team with what they have, basically bringing everything back the way it was?
Yeah, I mean, they're a championship caliber team because Giannis Antetokounmpo is, best player in basketball good. Right now. I mean, that's just what it is. And look, I think we're having a different conversation again of Chris Middleton's health. Do they beat Golden State? Maybe. But I think they get to the finals. And again, the mood, the tenor is different. I think to answer that question, we should loop in Marjan Beauchamp, that 6'6 wing who gives the Bucks that defender they missed against Boston when Chris Middleton was out. Chris Middleton's size is underrated at 6'7, 6'8. His ability to defend at a high level can be underrated. And not that these are replacements for Chris or, oh, they, what it is if Brook Lopez is pushed off the court, and that's going to happen more to the Bucks, and Giannis is your five, you know, you need 6'6" guys to defend. And so Marjan Beauchamp fits into this. Pat Connaughton opting in helps with this. You know, look, it's no small thing that he didn't opt out and choose to re-sign for $7 to $8 million annually, either with the Bucks or even go elsewhere. Reason being, the Bucks are a tax team. They already are. They're paying the tax. This just gives, look, if let's say they have to sign a guy at midseason again for $1 million, $1.2 million. Well, where did that come from? Well, Pat's making 5'7", not 7'2". You know what I mean? So like, so Pat's decision loops in. Obviously, him being back is also a big deal, for the same reasons Bobby Portis is back. Career high in threes, you know, you improving, you know, in that shot, that type of thing. We all know what PC can do and how Bud trusts him. So you have to loop those two in, JR, I think, to the conversation of are the Bucks championship team. Look, they address sort of that D part of the 3-and-D, they had in Beauchamp. They addressed the three part with Joe Ingles, you know, and you've got the best player in basketball and a big three who all can make the all-star team next year. That's no small thing, and that sets them up, if healthy, to once again contend for an NBA championship. And that's what this window's about, and that's really all you can ask for if you're a Bucks fan.
All right, so you mentioned George Hill. What roster questions are still out there? You know, this could eventually dovetail into Kevin Durant, even though I think it's pretty obvious Kevin Durant and the Bucks will not be crossing paths in the near future, and we'll talk about him in a minute. But like, are there still questions, maneuvers that can be made either now or during the season that you think the Bucks will have to address, or any other just lingering questions before we even get the season started?
So, you know, After John Horst's season-ending availability, it didn't sound like a talent evaluator who felt the drop defense has gone away or was losing its effectiveness. That was really my kind of big question for John. Now, at least that's what he said publicly. I mean, we'll find out here with Brook Lopez. But what Boston do to them, what the Clippers and Dallas had done to Utah to mitigate Rudy Gobert's effectiveness. Look, those are just three examples, but those are three playoff losses to two of the best regular season teams in basketball, in the Bucks and the Jazz. And they were defeated because their dominant defensive big man was taken off the floor or sort of rendered ineffective-ish, right? With smaller three ball shooting lineups. Horst, you know, mentioned how Lopez was still very, very good. This is what they do. So Lopez is back. And to me, do they extend him? I don't know. That's a different conversation, but let's say he's back. The Bucks are going to run what they run. Hopefully they have more flexibility defending smaller lineups with Beauchamp, Matthews for the entire season. Ingles, when he comes back, also can help in that regard offensively. George Hill, I don't know. Even if he retires, that's still $4 million that can be moved. Really, Grayson Allen is the only other piece that can go anywhere, and you kind of have to package him with George Hill because combined, it's about $12, $13 million. Would they want to do that? Sure. It lowers their tax bill. I guess for me, JR, the question is, look, Grayson Allen's 27 years old, shoots 40% from three, helped you win a playoff series. You know, was his defensive effort always as dialed in as Mike Budenholzer would want? No. But when he was dialed in, it actually looked pretty good. People hate on him for that Boston series, JR, but look back at it. Like game seven, I want to say for sure. Game five, I mean, when Grayson is into it defensively, he can defend well enough, right? So I guess my question to you, JR, is if you trade Grayson Allen and George Hill, are you getting a two-way player back who can hit 40% of his threes, who can defend on the perimeter and the wing? Like Joe Ingles has questions at 36 in ACL if he can defend. Wesley Matthews has questions at 36. Can he defend all year and score enough? Like Grayson Allen on any given night can give you 25. That to me is the calculus for John Horst, is if you move that guy, who are you getting back? I don't know the answer to that, because that, if you're talking about a trade, you're talking about maybe three teams, four teams. I mean, it could be someone on some roster who signed for 3 years that we're not thinking about. So that's the only real move, JR. And if you want to get into Kevin Durant magical mystery land, I'm here for it. Let's go.
Let's do it. Kevin Durant demanding a trade, or demanding is probably too strong, asking for a trade from the Brooklyn Nets shortly after Kyrie Irving opts in. It is the buzz of the internet, non-Big Ten edition, over the past 24 hours, as we record here on Friday. Very, it's not predictable, but it's every time we brought up the Nets, I would always mention, look, I know they're really good, they're really talented, they've got a lot of enigmatic personalities. You just can't trust that it's going to be, a true like multi-championship run, and sure enough, it's barely lasted 2 years here, really. Durant is going to change the face of how we see the race wherever he lands, Eastern Conference, Western Conference, doesn't matter. Whenever he ends up with a team, and that could be happening by the time you're listening to this, it could happen a week or two from now. No real idea on the timetable, but he is going to dramatically shift how people look at the race, and maybe how people look at the Nets, because the Nets, if they make a deal with Phoenix, for example, they stand to get a couple really key pieces like DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges, who will absolutely help that team get very good very fast again. But I don't know what you think about that. Like, are we at a point now where wherever Kevin Durant lands, yeah, they'll be good, but you just can't trust that it's stable. And so, maybe this is a good thing for the Bucks that the Brooklyn Nets are kind of, losing their concentration of power as a threat. I guess they weren't really even a threat this past postseason. They didn't even win a postseason game. So I, you know what? Just give me your thoughts on KD. Tell me what you think as this fiasco unfolds.
He's yet another of the game's greats to sort of tie his team, his future to Kyrie Irving, and it just didn't work, shockingly. So yeah, he's still an otherworldly talent. I mean, he's getting up there in age. I mean, look, Kevin Durant's rookie year, he still played in Seattle. He's gonna be 34 when the season starts. But we still know that Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. And I think if you're any team in the league, you have to call Brooklyn, even the Milwaukee Bucks. John Horst has to call Sean Marks. Like that guy under contract for 3 more years, you have to call. And if the answer is you've got to take Kyrie Irving, then if you're the Bucks, you hang up. But if you don't have to take Kyrie Irving, if we're going to play the magical mystery machine with Kevin Durant, yeah, you got to call. And yeah, Chris Middleton and Grayson Allen got to be part of that conversation. And because look, Brooklyn doesn't have, the reason I say that is, A, the Bucks don't have first rounders to trade, and Brooklyn has no first rounders of their own. So all of the national reporting, JR, is that Brooklyn wants real guys back. They want to play. Sean Marks had said in his season-ending press conference, they want selfless, team-oriented players willing to do whatever it takes to win, which obviously is a shot at Kyrie. Oh, and who are available. So obviously that's a shot at Kyrie Irving. Well, what better team to try to work a deal for than the Milwaukee Bucks, who that's their entire identity. And look, Chris Middleton has got 1 year left before his player option. Player options, generally speaking, are there for the player to decline it. If Chris Middleton turns in a fourth All-Star season, he'll decline his option because he's going to look for $200 million over 4 years. Because he's earned that in the system. Will the Bucks be willing to pay that? I don't know. But they're probably willing to pay $42 million for Kevin Durant. So, yeah, you call JR. Now, whether that happens, who knows? Yeah, would you have to talk to your superstar about that, about losing his championship-winning running mate for a decade? But I think Giannis would understand if Kevin Durant is suddenly his wingman. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like Chris Middleton, you and I, JR, like I'm a Chris Middleton, like believer, you know, me, I'm like, hey, he's better than everyone thinks. Well, he's not Kevin Durant. So he's, I'm not needed. Right. Like you do that if you're the Bucks. And if the Nets would take that, but who knows? Maybe they're looking for 25-year-old guys. And if that's the case, that the Bucks don't fit. But yeah, Durant is still that dude. I think he does bring an off-court element that for some teams probably need to be part of the calculus. You know, are you cool with social media? Are you cool with sort of that type of player flexing when he should, as he should, as he's earned in this league? I personally think, yeah, that stuff's overblown. I think in New York, it plays a certain way. I think in Chicago, Milwaukee, Denver, like name what, Oklahoma, Phoenix, like I don't think anybody cares about that stuff. Kevin Durant likes to play basketball, JR. He's a hooper. Let's be real about it. He wants to play basketball. And so I think he's going to make any team, of course, a championship contender. I've got no real problems with Kevin Durant. I think Kyrie is a whole other bag of worms or coins or whatever for teams to discuss. But thankfully, that's one the Bucks wouldn't even touch. So I don't know how much we need to get into him.
I'm trying to imagine the addition of Durant, what that would be related to other major moves in Wisconsin sports history. You know, like it would be, people would have to invoke the Reggie White signing of the early 90s for the Green Bay Packers. And, you know, I don't even know if the Brewers have ever acquired somebody. I mean, Christian Yelich is a big deal in retrospect, but I don't think the Brewers have ever quite acquired someone on that level. The superstar, not in his prime, but like just shy of his prime. I don't know. That would be it would be a different coverage, I would say, Jim, for you than it was this past season. It would be a different story.
Yeah, I think ESPN and the Athletic, National folks, Bleacher Report would be, you know, signing short-term leases in Milwaukee. Because I'd have to say short-term because you never know. After a year, Kevin Durant might decide he wants out.
This is true. Yeah.
But I think, it would force a little bit of, maybe some defensive changes for Bud and offensive. But you know what? I think Bud would be able to manage it. And can you imagine a pick and roll game with Giannis and Durant?
Yeah. I mean,
what do you do with that?
Respect to Joe Ingles' pick and roll abilities, but
yeah, right.
We're talking about a different thing.
Yeah. So it would be, I don't even know what it would be. The Reggie White thing is interesting, Jared, because if you think about it, the Bucks have already won the title. Like Giannis did the Reggie White thing. Like Giannis was like Reggie White plus Brett Favre plus Leroy Butler, Mike Holmgren all together, right? Like Drew Holiday, I guess it would be Reggie White because he came and then they won.
Sure, but he was traded for, so it wasn't.
Yeah, he was traded
for. The big thing about Reggie White is that he signaled to other people
to come, yeah.
Come to Green Bay.
I don't know. Like, Kevin Durant says he wants to go to Miami and Phoenix. I don't know who Miami would even trade, to be honest. But besides Tyler Hero, which I'm sure they'd gladly package him for Kevin Durant. But I don't know if you could trade Bam Adebayo for Durant. I think that defeats the purpose of what Miami's trying to do. But I could be wrong. Phoenix is a whole other thing. They can't trade Devin Booker. He just signed the Supermax. As with Bucks fans know, in that first year of that deal, that player cannot be traded. So that means no Devin Booker. Why would the Nets want Chris Paul? maybe because it's the complete opposite to a degree of Kyrie Irving. But does Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, and someone else give you Kevin Durant? I don't know. Maybe. So Durant might. He said, I don't know if he's got any leverage in this, JR. Like,
I don't think he does.
He could say, I want to go to Milwaukee. And the Bucks could be like, here's Chris Middleton, Grayson Allen, or Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez, or you know, whomever. And Brooklyn can say, nah, that's not for us. I mean, I don't think Kevin Durant could dictate where he goes on this one. So yeah, it'd be interesting. It's fun to talk about because at the very least, Durant's that guy, JR, that I do think John Horst has. If he doesn't call Sean Marks, they at least have to have the conversation, even if it's just what we're doing right now in their offices privately. Like, you have to. You're not doing your job if you're not, because he's available. And Brooklyn doesn't want any picks. Or, I mean, maybe they do, but it sounds like they'd prefer some guys who can, you know, get people in their building. So, yeah, it's fun to talk about. I mean, guys like that aren't available for trade very often.
Yeah, it would be a bold stroke, but you're emboldened by the recency of a championship a little bit, aren't you? Like, you could say, look, we did it, we won. We have a chance to possibly sustain this a little bit longer. Let's blow things up a little bit to bring in a transcendent player to pair with our other transcendent player and see where that gets you. You know, like it would be John line one of John Horst's, you know, career summary when it's all said and done. Even with the championship, I think, but it sure is interesting and almost certainly will not come to pass here in Milwaukee. But there's that little hint of possibility. Now that we've been talking, I'm feeling it a little bit more than I was before. Like, I kind of can picture Kevin Durant in one of those purple, ugly purple throwback jerseys that they're going to be reintroducing. I can kind of do that in my head right now. So yeah, that's something to watch here in the next few days. Again, all of this may be moot by the time you're hearing this, but hopefully not. Hopefully we get to you in time. Last thought, Jim. Giannis and Chris Middleton are both movie stars. Giannis was the executive producer on Rise, which showed up on Disney. It's the story of Giannis and Thanasis and his whole family in Greece, coming in as undocumented immigrants from Nigeria, where his parents, Giannis, of course, and his brothers, three of his brothers, born in Greece, but they put up with a lot. Very incredible underdog story that's been told a few times and given the Disney treatment. That was out on Disney last week. And then Chris Middleton was in Hustle on Netflix, the Adam Sandler movie, Adam Sandler basketball movie. Middleton and many, many other NBA players with bit roles and cameos in that movie. Jim, I know you're watching this stuff. Which movie did you like better, my friend?
Well, let's see. I was on vacation, JR.
Great time to watch movies.
Yeah. I didn't do anything electronic over that 6.5 day period. I was on a beach literally for 6 days. So, okay. But I will say this, I did catch the clips of Chris Middleton's acting debut.
Yeah.
And, he delivered his lines confidently. Like, he knew what he was talking about. The thing that blows my mind is that as an NBA, like, person who covers the league, the fact that Chris Middleton would be just chilling at the combine watching some dude, like, that's hilarious.
So let me tell you, I realize you didn't see them, and that's totally fine. Nor should you if you're on a beach. Here is actually my feeling on Hustle. Hustle, I really enjoyed it. Like, Chris Middleton, actually, yeah, I do think he only had like two or three lines, but they were lines. And he delivered them, and they were good. And there's a lot of just, it's ridiculously fun trying to be like, oh, that's Trey Young. Oh, that's Kyle Lowry. Oh, that's, you know, Anthony Edwards playing a character named Kermit as the top draft pick, supposedly. Like, it was really fun. And the main guy, Juancho Hernan Gomez, I'm going to say it wrong, the Spanish basketball player, who's obviously been in the league for a couple of years, he's really good. I really enjoyed him on screen, and I thought he's kind of a stoic performance, so it's hard to read too much into him, but, you know, like, it was really good. Adam Sandler was really good, and they have such good basketball action in the movie, because obviously most of the people playing are actual NBA players or NBA adjacent players. Michael Foster from Milwaukee has a small role. Like these are guys who actually are elite basketball players, so they have this really good basketball action that they pull from constantly. At the same time, the artifice around basketball is like complete fantasy land, make-believe stuff. You're talking about Chris Middleton showing up at the NBA Combine. The NBA Combine is framed as this like made-for-TV primetime event. You know, it's where it isn't even like the NFL Combine, which is still just kind of a background thing for most people. Like they really tried to, the whole framework is crazy that Adam Sandler sort of discovers this guy on the playground. He hadn't played organized basketball for eight years. He's convinced that he can be a top draft pick. And like the whole thing makes no sense. It's like Trouble with the Curve. If you're a baseball fan, like the plot itself doesn't make sense. If you're trying to pay legitimate homage to the NBA sort of framework or like how it works, so to speak. And for somebody who obviously deeply cares about basketball enough that he has all these contacts, all these famous people and great game action, it's weird that the whole like construct around it is like total weird fantasy land fiction. But that's, you know, that's all right. It was a good it was a fun time. It wasn't a movie to be taken too seriously, I don't think, but it was a fun time. And then Rise is what it is. It's a Disney movie. It's a great story, regardless of whether or not it's, you know, the story itself is great. You know, the kid actors are good. They're good. They're fine. It's a Disney movie, which comes with all kinds of bells and whistles that make it a little bit more cheesy than it needs to be. The music is so bad, Jim. The score, it's just like, oh, I'm supposed to be emotional now because here's this this score that I hear in an elevator. You know, like it's just really ridiculous stuff. But for I know people really loved it. I mean, obviously Giannis is at the heart of it. It's hard not to love if you're a Bucks fan. It is an incredible story, just an incredible underdog story. And if anybody is interested in that story further, they should read Mirren Fader's book Giannis. It's great. There's a lot of cool detail in there, so that's my review, my extended review of these movies.
I may yet see it at some point, just because I know the story and know how it ends doesn't prevent me from watching, you know, reality-based movies. Just kind of not on the list for me, at least in the immediate future, but yeah, we'll see. From the moment, you know, I covered Giannis being drafted and sitting with him and being one of the first to share all of that kind of story with Milwaukee and the world back in 2013-14, you knew then that even if he was just a regular player, it was a Hollywood type of thing. Let alone what's happened since. And I know Rise ends at the draft, and I think that's a right. Like that's a good marker. Cause like, it really isn't, it doesn't matter what he did after the fact. Like, that's just like ice cream on top of ice cream for him and his family. The fact that he became one of the game's all time great players. So yeah, JR, I'm sure I'll cue it up at some point. But you're right. You can't, look, even the most objective, cynical person in the world, and I'm not the most extra cynical objective person out there, even I know a good story and a feel-good story when I see it and hear it, and undoubtedly that is it for that family.
Yeah, I the best part of the movie, I agree with you, is that they ended it at the draft, because it is impossible, the idea that player would become the best player of the NBA. It is truly, truly beyond the pale of even Disney's, you know, storytelling aesthetic. So it was smart. They ended with a lot of clips, including his speech after he won his first MVP about his late father. They showed, you know, the two plays from the 2021 finals that will remain iconic, the block and the alley-oop. So they did their part, sort of nodding to the fact that, oh, by the way, he went on to become this great player, but you already knew that because you wouldn't be watching a movie about it if he hadn't. But it is in fact just a crazy real life story. And in a way, I think Hustle is sort of borrowing from the Giannis story, kind of the rags to riches, you know, guy that you found internationally who had no following and then, right, you know, gradually rose up through the ranks. It's an interesting sort of comparison, I think, and told from the guy who's doing the discovering's point of view. Of course, it's Hustle as a fiction, but definitely borrowing some elements. So, cool stuff. If you haven't seen Ben Steele track down Deonte Garrett and Dwight Bikes, who get name checked, Milwaukee basketball stars, one Bikes who played at Marquette, Garrett at Iowa State. played at Vincent. That's a really interesting story at jsonline.com, how their mentions came about. Their mentions don't quite make timeline sense, which made them all the more curious, and Ben Steele tracked that info down. It's really, really good. So check that out at jsonline.com. I had some takeaways from Rise as well. Jim, I think that's all we got, man. What's I don't know when we're going to do this again, but I suppose if we find out any news per our discussion, George Hill or Grayson Allen there or Kevin Durant, there will be another podcast. But I think we're out for a while. So thanks for joining me, man.
Yeah, of course. It's been good. You know, the Bucks probably done. Yeah, aside from a trade in that way. And to me, I think that would count as a major move when you're moving veterans and things of that nature. But yeah, you know, Summer League in July for Marjan Beauchamp, and really JR camp in September, provided there are no injuries or things of that nature. I think Giannis and Thanasis likely to play for Greece in the Eurobasket tournament. I don't think he or they have confirmed that yet. I know Kostas is already playing for Greece right now. The Greek media feel he's gonna play. Like, I'm not saying we're not gonna talk to y'all until, you know, camp in September, but like, in terms of just things to keep on your radar, that's probably Luka Vildoza. I don't know if he can play Summer League, JR. I don't know where he's at in the eligibility. If he can, maybe that's interesting. Him and Marjan Beauchamp, to see what those two players are able to do in a Summer League setting. But yeah, it Bucks probably done unless there's a major trade in the offing. Enjoyed it. It's you know, unlike all these other teams, the Bucks get, you know, they're still being chased, if you will, JR. So they get to kind of, you know, sit back and relax and enjoy their summer a little bit.
Yep, so we've got a couple months, most likely, before you hear from us again, barring some breaking news. Thanks for tuning in to the Point Forward podcast. We'll be back with you soon enough, and keep up to date on everything with Jim, with everything that's going on in Wisconsin sports at jsonline.com. Thanks, Jim. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, talk to you then.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.